everyone. Dave here from Casual Shooters Podcast. Just a couple things real quick. Laser app. On our website, I've added a new page. If you go to sponsors, you can see links to all of our sponsors. There's a link for Laser app. You can get 15% off with our code. It's on the website, but it's a great dry fire tool. It's a shot timer and recorder, so it'll record your first shot, splits, transitions. It's even diverse enough that you can set up arrays in different rooms so that you can have to move from one to another. It'll record everything. Amazing device. Check it out. Go to our webpage, casualshooterpodcast.com. Also, Hoist. We've got our discount code on the webpage again, same page. But you get 10% off there, and we're talking IV level hydration for those of you shooting major matches this summer, even your local matches. It will help keep you hydrated. So go check it out. And also Gun Butter. There's a link for Gun Butter. You can get 20% off with our link. It's excellent lubrication for your pistols. Put a little on your lugs, the grease on the lugs of your rifle. Good to go. All right, so go to our webpage, casualshooterpodcast.com. Go to the sponsor page. Links to their website right there, and the codes are on there for you. All right, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later. Welcome to this week's special edition of the Casual Shooters Podcast, your premier podcast for the casual shooter. This week, I have a special guest who comes by way of Iowa and is brought to you by the movie Field of Dreams. You know, corn. All right, so he's running for Area 3 Director. How about a warm welcome for Scott Arnberg? All right. Oh, you got the crowd in a frenzy.
Right up. Thanks. Thank
you. How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing well, Dave. I'm doing well. You know, busy day at work and got the fam on hold for now, and I'm going to spend some time chatting with you.
All right. Typically I'd have you introduce yourself, but I'd be afraid you go over your bio. So we're going to leave it at that for now, because we're going to go over your entire bio. So you'll be introduced over a good period of time.
Okay.
But we do have to hit the very, most important four questions that we always ask.
I prepared for these.
Oh, awesome. I like it when people prepare. I love it. All right. So what's your favorite movie?
Fifth Element.
Oh, good movie. Okay.
Fifth Element. Bruce Willis. You know, you've got some sci-fi. You've got some gunplay and aliens. I mean, what are you missing?
You've got the whole gamut covered.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So what about your favorite book?
So I'm going to answer this with two answers. My favorite nonfiction would be How to Influence People and Win Friends. I'm butchering that title.
I know what you're talking about.
Yep, that I read that professionally, and then have learned how to apply it in all aspects of my life. And that one would be tied probably with Freedom Flight. I had the privilege of meeting Lanny in person and listening to him give that talk. You know, there was very few dry eyes in the house as he told that story.
Okay. All right.
And then on the pure fluff entertainment side, Centurion by John Ringo. It's an alternate history. Think COVID-19, but it actually killed people. And the experience as an army trooper during that.
So you mean like real science, not like Fauci science?
Well, I think those are one and the same, right?
All right. I do like alternative history books. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. John Ringo made me think of Johnny Ringo.
Yep. Yep. John Ringo. He's got quite a few books out. I read a lot. I'm a sci-fi, military sci-fi reader. I do a fair amount of traveling for matches and other stuff. And you can only listen, you know, there's the podcast for so long and music for so long, and then so I do books on tape.
Yeah, you got to mix it up.
Yeah,
for sure. So were you in the military?
I was not. I'm one of five And all three of my brothers served, and my sister's wife served. So I have some mobility issues that I
Okay.
was graced with from the start, and so I never qualified.
Okay.
Four knee surgeries and have my femur cut in twice, or cut in half twice, and I get around, but I am far from fleet of foot.
Yo, diggity. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that'll hamper your movement for sure. All right. So, the Huggy special. Who's your favorite superhero?
It's got to be Iron Man, right? He's got it all. He's the Superman, he's the superhero, and he's rich and has the pretty girl.
Yeah, I mean you almost said it right. He's like the rich man Superman.
Right.
So
Right.
yeah, he does almost everything Superman does. He's got the laser, he's got it all.
He could fly, man. Come on.
Yeah, he can fly, absolutely. So I get you. And your favorite gun and caliber.
So, gun and caliber. One of my things is I collect World War II firearms. And so I have the Springfields and the Grands and the Enfields and the Mosins. But the one that I drag out a couple times a year and shoot is one of the CMP Grands. I just love to shoot it. I just love to shoot it.
Okay. You shoot it at the range you belong to up there? Is that
Yeah.
where you go?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And then I'll do some of the, we have military rifle matches occasionally, and I've shot a couple of those. I'm not super competitive, but I enjoy it, and it's fun to shoot. It's a gun I've always wanted. Big World War II buff. I think that comes with the age 50 in this generation, right? It's kind of a requirement.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah,
And
and so I've.
that right there is me shooting an M14 service rifle at the 1,000 yard line here at Quantico.
Oh, outstanding.
Yeah.
Outstanding. And and I've followed through the books. I've read Hath the books about Hathcock. I like, that's interesting. And actually read the, what is it, Band of Brothers. I actually read the book by Ambrose. The show was great, but I, you got to read the book because there's a lot more there. And then my winter hobby, because I live in Iowa, where 4 months of the year you don't want to go outside. Is I build and paint little tanks and play strategy
Ooh,
games with them.
you make dioramas too, or just
No, pure no, I never get that deep into the modeling. My modeling is just about, hey, this is an Abrams. Here are the rules for it, and we it's some stuff is just made up, and some stuff is, hey, here's this battle, here were the forces. Can you get the same outcome?
hey, have you seen any of those the RC tanks?
I have. I
Man,
have.
those things are impressive.
They are cool, and I've tried to limit myself in hobbies. I tend to be an all-in guy, so
Uh-oh.
I've got shooting. I've got my the games that I play, and then I try to not do anything else, because you run out of time, and then the stuff sits.
Money.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah, for
I got
sure.
into like RC stuff. I got into it, and then my kids were, we adopted our kids, and then we were busy, and by the time I got back to it, nothing I had worked. A whole generation of radios had come and gone, and there was yet another one. And so it's just like, okay, yeah, I'm good here. My blue stuff will always be good.
It's passing me by. Yep, I get
Yep.
you. All right. Now, normally I would ask a fifth question, but our fifth question is going to be everything about Area 3 and
Sure.
running for that. So
Sure.
that's where we're going to start. Now, some of these are my questions. I did reach out to some other people in USPSA and I was like, hey, I'm interviewing a guy for an area director candidacy. No names, no area. So there would be no bias or
Okay.
anything at all. And I got a bunch of questions back. So I've interspersed those in with the ones that I've come up with.
Okay.
Number one that I have, though, is when is the Area 3 election?
So what I have been told, and I have not seen an official press release, I spoke with Sherwin at the match, and he said that they were thinking November would be when the ballots would go out. And then you go through the normal election cycle. If you don't have a clear majority as defined by the bylaws, then that goes to a runoff election. And so it could be that the elected Area 3 director really is not installed until January or February, maybe even March, just depending on how long it takes to get everything done. If there's a runoff election. The first round of voting will be about Thanksgiving is what I was told.
And that will run until when?
Typically, it's a month, just like it's the same process that they're doing right now with the presidential runoff election.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I meant like from there, how much time do you have until that term ends?
Oh, so Matt was just elected. And so I believe it's a 4-year term. And so it would be the remainder of his term would be what this election is for.
So you're looking at about three to, he got in what, about late last year?
Yeah. So I think about 3 years.
Yeah. 2.5, 3 years. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Now I assume you've read and you're familiar with the bylaws, all that stuff.
I have. I've been involved with USPSA. I joined in 2005. Worked my way up RO, CRO, range master. Volunteered at Area 3. I did prize table for 3-4 years. Boy, that's a zero fun job, and everyone that does that needs an extra pat on the back.
You need an extra dollar in their paycheck.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm pretty familiar with the bylaws. I serve on several nonprofits.
I saw that. We'll be getting into that. Because I think it will relate, but I want to get your input on that, obviously. So what is your interpretation then as to the job, responsibility, role of the Area 3 director?
Well, I think there's two different answers to that. There's the answer that the bylaws define, and then there's what I feel the role is. And my feeling on the role is it's my job to support and enable the section coordinators and the club presidents to run quality matches. And that's done through, that's one part of it that, you know, that's done being a resource to answer questions, getting out there and feet on the ground and helping and traveling around and shooting matches. And then, you know, being an advocate, for the competitor, at the board meetings.
Okay. All right, that comes into play later too, because we'll have more in-depth questions about that. Now, you were, for the audience, you were kind enough, you did supply a bio beforehand. Mm-hmm. So, as you stated, running through your bio, 2004 was your first match ever, and that was IDPA.
Yep. When I first started, I bought my first pistol in 2004. It was a SIG 220, because 45 was cool. I grew up in a hunting family, in Iowa. It's rifled slugs and shotgun for deer. So we really didn't have a whole lot of rifles. Up until recently, through involvement with another organization in town that I'm sure you'll ask about, but anyway, it was illegal, for a 16-year-old to possess or touch or use a pistol. 16 and under against the law in Iowa. So I didn't have a lot of pistol experience. Fast forward, I got out of the house. I saw one, I wanted it, you know, so I bought that. And the range I went to, there happened to be an IDPA match. And I tell you what, that first match, I got there and I was like, wow, this is way cooler than standing still and shooting holes in targets. You know, we had a little bit of steel. We had a little bit of movement. We had these guys that said they were with some SWAT in the area that had 1911s with no front sights, and they just ran around and threw rounds everywhere. And from there, I met a friend and another friend, and we got down to a range in Osceola that ran USPSA. And from there, it was like, oh, this is way better. You know, I don't, you know, I ditched the vest and ended up switching over to an XD that Canyon Creek had worked over and shot production for quite a while after that and made M with that gun.
Okay. I've owned a couple of XDs. I do like them. They're nice guns.
Yeah. Yeah. And Rich does such a good job. That was back when, you know, the big deal was to mill in the Bomar sight at the back of the slide. Now we're putting red dots on them.
Yeah. Take those Bomars off and replace them with red dots. Yep.
Back when you could still get Bomars there, that's all gone too.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Huh? That's actually what I have on that 1911 back there. Bomar. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like you said, 2005, you switched to USPSA. You're shooting a P220 in production. Now you said you're currently classified in every division.
Yeah, I'm classified in every division. And you know, because I hit the master in production, everything's an A. And it, like all things, I was younger. I was training hard. I was shooting a lot. Kind of peaked, hit that master. And then kids happened and job changes happened. And now I'm kind of re-engaging back into the sport. I'm shooting carry optics. It's always been my thing. I pick a division and I shoot it for the whole year. I don't dabble in and out. I pick a division. I stick with it. I'll shoot it for the whole shooting year. Our shooting year here runs. And when I say shooting year, that's the outdoor season. We have indoor matches. But our, you know, the indoor matches do really well for what they do, but we don't have any super big indoor ranges. And so our shooting season runs from, I start training in end of March, and we hold our sectional towards the end of the shooting season each year. This year it's at the end of September. And so I'll shoot that same gun all the way through.
So right in between Carry Optics Nationals and the Big Four.
Yeah, and actually we had to move our sectional this year because they scheduled over us. Traditionally, we are always the second weekend of September, and they dropped Carry Optics Nationals on top of us. So we had to move. It's the biggest, most popular division. I mean, Area 3, we had, 360-some shooters, and 130 of them were Carry Optics.
Yeah, it's super popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't have that many people for your match.
No.
Everybody's at Nationals.
Yeah.
Especially with it being a standalone. I mean, you can handle 500 carry optic shooters. So
right.
It's a big percentage too.
Yeah.
So are you going to be at Nationals this year?
I will not. I didn't make any plans to be at it. When I was making plans for that, you know, Matt had been elected and I didn't know that this opportunity existed. But I am looking forward, I the light's at the end of the tunnel. I've got, one of my two kids driving. And so my free time has suddenly opened up quite a bit. No longer, am I, you know, football practice and camp and work and jobs and, you know, at 16 and 15, they don't want a lot to do with me right now.
Of course. Yeah. They're at that age.
Yep. They're at that age.
But they're also the nice thing about it too, is, you know, the conversations you can have are more adult and they're way more independent. I have two sons, one's 22 and one's about to turn 20. So,
okay.
I've been through that phase.
Yep.
I can relate.
Yeah. I love my kids to death, but there are some times where it's like, man, it's match day and I need to go.
I hear you. Yeah. Yes. Sometimes you need that me time.
Yep.
All right. So 2007. So two short years after getting into the USPSA, you become an RO.
Yep.
5 years later, 2012, you become a CRO.
Yep.
And 2016, you become a range master.
Yes.
Now, what point in there did you start match directing?
I can't remember off the top of my head. It would have been
stumped him.
They stumped me. So we built a new bays in 12. I want to say it was like 2010. I think it was 2010, a group of us. But the range in Osceola is a nice range. It's a little remote. It's about 45, 50 minutes one way from Metro Des Moines. And there was another facility. It was an Isaac Walton League that had potential, but only had a single shooting bay that was 15 minutes away from the Des Moines Metro. And so some of us got together and, you know, we had talked about buying land and building a range and ultimately decided just to kind of get involved here and just build it through sweat equity. And so we started with Steel Challenge. You know, we had a single bay. It's rough to run USPSA, but we did end up running USPSA, and we would set up, it's a 100-yard bay that's 40 yards wide. And so we would set up three stages and shoot them as a big lump. And then in 2012, you know, we had kind of gotten more and more people into leadership positions in the chapter. We undertook took on a note and moved 33,000 cubic yards of dirt and built four more bays to take us from one to five. And that's when really the club took off. You know, the membership spiked. Obama won. You know, we added, you know, 30% membership. And so we started running matches on Tuesday nights. And now we're into our, I think, 10 or 12th year of running that. And so every Tuesday night from the beginning of April to the end of September, we'll set up a 4 to 5 stage club match, shoot it, and tear it down. I hit the range about 3 o'clock. We're shooting by 5:30, and we're out of there by, I think this week was 8, 7:30. We were done. And so the range master really came out of desire to learn more and understand more for the sectionals, running the level 2 each year. The very first, I worked a couple sectionals down in Osceola.
Scott, I'm going to stop you right there for a second.
Sure.
I want to keep going down that track, but okay. I have some questions about some stuff you just said, so I don't want to get so far away that it's irrelevant.
Okay.
So I understand what Isaac Walton is. I'm a member of an Isaac Walton League here in Virginia.
Yep.
It's all about conservation. We have the same thing. We have two pistol bays, a rifle bay, and a shotgun bay. That's all we have.
Yep.
Now, I have specific questions because we had a guy who was the president at one time who was like, somebody was trying to become a member and was, you know, for like months in a row, the new person trying to become a member would say, you know, I hunt, I fish, I like to shoot. And finally, after about the fourth month in a row of somebody saying that, the guy was like, we're not a gun club.
Yep.
So my question to you is, there's a lot of turmoil, if you want to call it that, with the USPSA right now.
Yeah. That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah. So like, I'm going to say you're going to be Dave Riddle for a day.
Okay.
How would Dave, in this case, you, and trying to deal with this type of stuff, how did you go to them, a conservation league, and say, we want to take out a note and we want to build all these bays? How did you overcome that?
Well, it was, I guess, from the standpoint of the board at that time, it was a bit of a hostile takeover, to be brutally honest. I read the bylaws, and we read it, and there was a group of us. I think there was the board is 12 people. I think we had 4 or 5 at the time that were pistol shooters. We basically used the bylaws as they're supposed to be used. And we called a true members meeting because at the time there was two camps. There was we need to build a bigger, nicer, better chapter house because that's the building that all the shotgun sports use to do their thing. And then the other side of the agreement was, hey, we need more bays. we need more opportunities to shoot. You know, this 100 yard bay only kind of works because, you know, it, you can't really put targets closer than 25 because then your rounds are leaving the range. And so it just came down to, we called a members meeting and at that point we had been running matches and we were drawing 25, 30 people to a match. You know, the membership at that time was 200. So we worked and we got those 30 some people to show up and then some other people that were like-minded, and we voted as a club, as a full club, and said, what's the priority? Is it bigger chapter house or is it more shooting opportunities? And more shooting opportunities won.
Okay.
So it involved politics. It involved me getting out there, and not just me. And make sure, you know, I want to make sure that's clear. It wasn't just me. There was five or six of us that got out there. We shook hands and we talked to people and said, hey, this is our vision.
Okay. Yeah, we just.
But you have a great question, you know, a great point. Isaac Walton League, in its core, is a conservation organization. And we are cognizant of that. And I attended several national conferences, and it was my experience that there are three types of Ikes. There's the ones where most of their revenue is driven through shooting sports. There's the one where they're a social club. Like, we have an Isaac Walton in Des Moines proper. So it's actually in town. They have no shooting opportunities. They have a bar and they host. Their main revenue generator is they have a full commercial kitchen and like a reception hall for weddings. So that's how they make most of their money, is they rent that place out and they do weddings. And then every Tuesday night, they do a members dinner where you come in and for a few dollars, you get a big meal and it's a big social event. And then the other one is the pure conservation organization where they may or may not have land. You know, the Ikes, especially in Iowa, Iowa's one of the biggest states for a number of Isaac Walton League chapters. Funny story. The chapters in Iowa that are flourishing all have ranges attached and all have very aggressive and outgoing shooting sports opportunities. You know, we've gone from two trap houses with old machines in them that we got from other ranges to, in the time I've been in here, we're on our third generation of machines. We have four trap houses. We've got over 200 kids shooting Scholastic Clay Target Program. And at the height of practice, we're throwing 20,000 birds a week.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. We just did a lead reclamation that our president led that effort after the ground only being not under till because we owned a 40-acre parcel. The Shot Fall Zone used to be farmed. We took it out of tillage 2 years ago. And they still took 41,000 pounds of lead out of the ground.
Wow. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Man. Because we
that's
are
just shotgun. And that's a, you know, not to get too far in the woods, but if you have an existing trap range, that is a fantastic way to make money. It costs the chapter nothing. And we got 30% of the profits.
Oh, wow.
It cost us nothing.
I knew you could make money off of it. I didn't realize it was 30%. That's impressive, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we have 100 acres total,
mm-hmm.
and we have just the little bit that I mentioned, and they just built a 3,000 at a minimum. It's at least 30 feet wide by 100 feet long. It might even be 150 feet long building, so at least 3,000 square foot steel structure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty much mostly conservation.
Yeah. When we started, we had a chapter house that was probably, I don't know, not big. It's still same chapter house, but now we've got the five shooting bays. We've got a 40 by 60 barn, couple Connexes, and, you know, debt free. In fact, we've got a good chunk of money in the bank. You know, my vision is, you know, because I'm still on the board, is two sides of us are either federal wetlands or state conservation. And the third, and the other side is a century farm and then a road. And so I would love to move trap to the north side of the road, and turn our trap fields into pistol bays.
Okay.
Because that's the, you know, we run what I think is probably one of the best level twos, in the area. And we do it in a range that's less than ideal. If I could get five more bays, man, the sky's the limit.
So is that the Iowa sectional?
Yep. Yep.
And how many stages do you normally have for that?
We have 11.
Oh, that's still actually pretty good. I mean,
yeah. So we run six squads, and each bay has two stages in it. And so you'll actually shoot two stages of bay, and then move.
Okay.
And so the normal rotation is competitor, staff shoots on Friday. And then we have a full day of competitors Saturday and Sunday. Most days we're out of there, barring weather, by 4 o'clock, starting at 8.
All right. That's not bad.
No.
And you say that's normally at the end or middle of September, but this year it's the end of.
It's normally right over the second weekend in September, but this year we moved to the end to get away from Carry Optics Nationals.
Okay. Now, how many you were from 2010 to 2020? You were the Iowa section coordinator.
Yep.
That's a long time to be the coordinator. So.
Well, and. And the Iowa section is never been super organized. You know, the section coordinator gives out slots, answers questions, help clubs get affiliated, a bit of a collection agent a little bit, because if clubs don't pay their activity fees, then now in the advent of practice score, you know, you can look and see, you know, how many USPSA matches did you really run? You haven't uploaded them all. You haven't paid them all. And so some of that at one point fell on the section coordinators to help, you know, network with these guys and get them to pay. And then I turned that over, Jason Ross took over for me and he's doing a great job. You know, that's one thing I'd like to see, and would like to help take on is a little more robust involvement with nationals at, the state level or the section level, in a support role. You know, when I first affiliated our club, there was a big manual and you got your Easy Win score disc and there was some resources, but I don't believe right now there's even a club manual. I don't think one exists. And you know, I've helped stand up in the last couple of years, some new clubs. And, you know, you've got to get your section coordinator's signature and eight USPSA members. I think it is 8 or 10. You know, that's about the extent of involvement from HQ, you know, things like, you know, where do you get props? One of the things that I do or that my club does is we bulk ship in targets. So we have we basically have a warehouse and a forklift. And so I'll order 10,000 targets at a time, and it allows me to then, and at, you know, just basically paying cost and taxes, because we got to pay sales tax. We're offering targets to other clubs and competitors at what is it, 56 cents a piece? Well, I mean, you can't touch that anywhere. If you see them online, they're normally 75, 80 cents, and then you got to get them here. And the shipping is what kills you.
Right.
So things like that, you know, how do you save some money? And then talking to your individual club and say, hey, you know, I know that at a club level match, you know, your cost all in per shooter is about $4.20, depending, you know, how do you price your match appropriately? Right. Cause you can't lose money at this. Right. Yeah, no club can exist by losing money. You've got to make money because poppers are expensive and, you know, maintenance and upkeep and heck, the insurance for our range each year is no small number.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have money to reinvest into it. So you can't lose money. Now, so my question for that then would be, knowing that from your past experience, if you were to become the Area 3 director, what would you do to try to rectify that?
Well, I would have to see, you know, are they, is there a club manual in process? Why are we doing that? What kind of resources are available? And then to be that resource, and you've got to get out and travel around. I try to travel twice a month, to a club in the area. And then, you know, that's a hard question to answer, you know, cause I don't know all the details. And I do know that, what USPSA can't do is they just can't write checks. You can't say, hey, I want to start a club in this town. What can you give me? Well, USPSA can't do that, right? They can't just write checks. You know, they could give support. I'd like to see a little more support on the, you know, I know they, I helped a club in Holstein this year, you know, answered a lot of questions on how do I get our free RO class, you know, and explain that process on, you know, hey, you've got to run, you've got to be affiliated club, you've got to run four matches with classifiers, and then you qualify for the free RO class. And then how do you do that? And stuff like, you know, things like that are kind of hard to dig out of the USPSA website. That, you know, that information is there, but it's kind of buried. So the biggest thing is just being that resource to answer questions and being available and approachable. I don't know if I answered your question very well.
Yeah, you did. I mean, as I get, what I'm hearing is you want to investigate to see what other resources are available that people are unaware of. Mm-hmm. For the people in Area 3, or obviously it would benefit everybody, because if you were to find that out, then it would become public knowledge and everybody could take advantage of it. Yeah. So that's that. You did answer the question. Yeah. So no big deal.
And I've heard, you know, one of the things I've heard is, you know, to provide props and things to start that out. But man, how many times do you do that before, you know, you're broke?
Right.
Right.
And you have the unique experience of taking a club which was broke and making them profitable. So you understand what it takes.
Yeah. You've got to run it like a business. And at the same time, you've got to be cautious, because we are a luxury endeavor, right? So if you think about it, so right now, you know, my true career is in finance. And so I'm very kind of keyed in to the economy and what's going on right now. And so we're right now living through record inflation. Gas prices have doubled. And USPSA is a luxury hobby. You know, it will always come last for the average competitor. Now, you have your exceptions, right? You have your guys that this is what they do, right? And you know, and people ask me, well, how many rounds you shoot a year? And I'll tell them, and they'll say, oh man, how do you afford that? I said, well, do you see a boat in my driveway? Well, no. Well, that's how I afford that. I this is what I do. This is my thing. And they'll be the people that will do that. They'll compete and they'll travel, and it won't matter how much it costs. But then that is what, 5% of our sport, 10% maybe. The big bulk, you know, they've got to choose between, you know, I've got kids in school, I've got, you know, whatever. And, you know, I've heard a lot of talk about, hey, you know, we need to raise dues, raise prices. We had this conversation with our club and I said, no, that's the last thing we need to do. We can't afford to raise prices right now. You know, we're already seeing a drop in numbers. You know, that person that goes to Fleet Farm or Walmart or Sportsman's Warehouse and buys two boxes of ammo the day before the match, that person isn't coming anymore. They either can't afford it or they can't find the ammo. And so that's one of the questions I have is looking forward. I don't see that changing. And, you know, at a club level, we've made decisions on our spending to anticipate that drop in revenue. You know, our Scholastic Clay Target program, we're down significantly. We're probably down 18-20% because they can't find ammo and the ammo they can find is twice as expensive. And so we're looking forward at, you know, what are we buying now? You know, what are we invested in props, and what can we wait on until some of this clears out and things either get back to normal, or maybe this is the new normal, right? Maybe $60 primers are what you're going to have to pay now. And who is that going to affect, and how are we going to be healthy as an organization with 20% less revenue next year and maybe every year after it?
That's interesting that with the lack of a better term, I'll just call it budget crisis with the USPSA per se. Yep. I don't know how bad it is, so I'm just using that term generically, that you do have a background in finance.
Yep.
So I take it you understand profit and loss sheets and all of that. Okay.
I do.
That was actually a question that was submitted from one of the individuals I reached out to. So that's good.
So, and I'm going to qualify that and say, I understand them. Okay. But I'm not afraid to ask for help.
Okay. Right?
And I carry that through, you know, what we talk about here, and I want to make sure I'm going to qualify this, and I'm sure I will later. I don't run any of this club by myself. I have a lot of people that work just as hard as I do. And yeah, I'm kind of the guiding force, and I, you know, I'm kind of the guy that kind of gives direction. But I know I'm not an expert in everything. I just have found the right people in the different roles, and I just give clear instructions, and then I leave them alone, and things happen. It's great.
Yeah, just like the way the presidency of the United States is supposed to work. You don't have to. My point is that you don't have to have all the answers. You just have to have good people around you that can help you with the finding those answers.
Yep.
And that's how it's meant to work.
Yeah.
So I get it. So okay. Let me back up for a minute. So you've also served as a staff for Area 3 Championships and Nationals. In what capacity have you served?
So Nationals, I've been an RO and a CRO. And then at Area 3, I've done the website. I've done prize support. I've done staple up targets. I've been an RO. I've been, you know, the guy that gets there, you know, on Wednesday and asks them what needs done. And you know, that involvement has waxed and waned depending on my personal life.
I think that's right. That's where everybody is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever time you can spare, you will, but
I think I did chrono for a couple of years.
At what matches have you match directed?
We here in Iowa, in the Iowa sectional, my partner in crime, Andrew Smithson, and I kind of split the match director role up and take different portions of it. We've kind of co-match directed probably since 2016, every year since then. I worked as an RM at Area 3 one year with Troy as I finished my RM. And then I'm match director for all our club matches. And then in my role at the Ikes, I'm the shooting sports coordinator. I indirectly oversee, I recruited our IDPA guy that does a great job, runs the IDPA matches. I recruited a guy to run NRL 22. He does a great job. And that's just kind of, you know, USPSA is my passion, but I know we have the opportunity and the interest for all these other sports. I found the person that was willing to run it. And I said, what do you need? We need targets. Do you need it on the calendar? How do I make you successful?
Okay. Now you, as you've said, you're on that board of director at the, if I'm saying it correct, Dragoon Trail Chapter, Isaac Walton League.
Yep. I'm currently past president. I've been a board member. I've been membership guy. I've been, I was president for 5 or 6 years. and now I'm in that past president role.
And so I take it then you're the IWLA is a nonprofit organization. So
correct.
I take it you're very familiar then with the operation of a nonprofit. Correct.
Yep. And okay. And that's you know, maybe one misconception. Just because you're a nonprofit doesn't mean you can't make profit.
Correct.
You know, we make a profit. We see a P&L every month. We track every penny in, every penny out. The unsung hero of Practice Score, for lack of a better term, is the ability to take online payments. We take no cash for our USPSA matches. Everything is done online payment. Everything is tracked. We know where every penny goes. There's no deposits. There's no running it to the bank. It is so nice.
You have an electronic marking for every single transaction. Yes. Yep.
And our treasurer is a stickler. If you buy something, we have an online web form where you upload the receipt and everything is accounted for. Every penny.
Wow.
And it's 100% transparent. All of our board meetings are open to any member. And if you want to see the books, in fact, we form an internal audit every year, and we specifically select two non-board members to sit on that committee, and they go through everything. They have carte blanche access to QuickBooks. They get to see all the receipts. They get to see every check written, every cash deposit. Everything is laid bare.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then the minutes and those reports are published to our website every month, or they're supposed to be. Okay. I don't do that, but they're supposed to be. They're there. If you come to the meeting, they're there, and they're set. They're distributed by email. So at any request, you can get a copy of the P&L at any time. We know exactly where, and you know, there's a little bit of competition, right? You know, did the shotgun sports make more money this year, or did the non-shotgun sports? You know,
okay.
Because I don't know what it is, but it always seems like there's, you know, we're all together. We should all be together, but there's always that little bit of rivalry, I think.
I think that's the American nature of the American spirit. So everybody's always competing.
Yeah.
Now that you, let's go back for just a second, because we touched briefly on you bringing an organization basically in debt to completely out of debt.
Yep.
But you also, talking about that in particular, you were saying in your bio that at one time all they had was a single 100-yard rifle pistol bay. They were in debt and less than 150 members. To now there's four additional shooting bays and shelters.
Yep.
And 750 plus members and debt free.
Correct. Actually, we have six figures in the bank.
All right. That's very impressive.
And again, I did not do that alone.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I get that.
We've had several treasurers, but I have been on the board that entire time when all that went down. Yes.
And that's what I was going to say. You were at least a part of it that entire time. So
that's correct.
You understand that.
Yes.
So that's the type of experience you're going to be taking to the USPSA board, assuming you get elected.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And like you said, in 2010, you guys affiliated with USPSA. So for 12 years now.
Yeah. And I think we run, the last year I looked as section coordinator, like 70% of the mission count for the state is our club.
Wow.
Well, okay. I mean, if you run, well, this week we ran 36 people, a 36 person club match with a classifier, right? So mission count is equal to dollars paid. You know, that's pretty normal. So, you know, $105, I think, was our activity fee. And you take that times, what is it? April, May, June, July, August, September, 24 weeks. Times $100, and then the sectional will be $6 a head times 250 shooters, and then any one-offs, like we do a charity match each year. The benefit is Iowa Cops or Iowa Concerns of Police Survivors, and so it's a match to raise money for an organization that supports the widows and children of fallen police officers in Iowa.
Wow.
And so, and I'm take no credit for that. We have several competitors that they have gotten involved and formed a shooting team, and they travel around and represent those guys. And it's pretty cool just to see them all. And during that match, sometimes some of the families come out, and it's pretty special.
Oh, that is pretty cool to have family members come out, surviving members. Okay. Now, I was really intrigued by the last two things you had on your bio. You said you're currently serving on the executive committee of the Iowa Firearms Coalition and the Iowa Supreme Court Grievance Committee.
Yep.
Can you just touch on what your roles are in those committees?
Sure. So we'll start backwards, the Iowa Grievance Committee. So basically the way that I can explain this, I can't obviously go into detail, is whenever attorneys have problems that cause their licensure into question, they go through this grievance commission, and there's a panel is put together, and it's usually 3 to 5 other attorneys and then a lay person. For a while in my professional career, I was a chief compliance officer for our firm. And so dealing with that compliance and ethics, a good friend of mine that I shoot with, nominated me for this. It's an all volunteer panel. And basically what happens is when an attorney comes up for disciplinary actions within the state, we sit and give an opinion on what we think should happen. Do they continue to practice? Do they not? If they don't, how long, you know, what's that like? And I serve as a lay person on this. It's completely voluntary, but it's very interesting, to sit on that and to interact with other professionals and get their input. And you know, the big thing I drew out of it is I recently did one where the person in question had done something that in my professional career, done, out of business, find a new job for the rest of your life. And they were looking at maybe a 2-year bar.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
that would be very interesting.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And then the Iowa Firearms Coalition, I help with, pushing the Sec 2A rights, in Iowa. I help.
So it's like a grassroots organization.
It is. It's also the NRA affiliated club with the state. The big push right now is Iowa's one of 6 states that does not have the right to keep and bear arms on the Constitution. And so IFC, and I say we, but I'm kind of late to the party. This is a newer role for me. IFC has done the work. So it takes the amendment to be written. It has to go through 2 election cycles and be published. And so anyway, this November, the right to keep and bear arms will be on the ballot for the people to vote in and put as an amendment to our Constitution. And this has been a multi-year process to get us there. One of the things when I first got started shooting, when I got my pistol back in 2005, Polk County is where Des Moines is, biggest county in the state. There were 2 guys that could train you to get your concealed weapons permits. And it was absolutely, it was may issue, not shall issue. And these 2 guys had a license to print money. They ran classes of 40 people 3 times a week at $100 a head, all the time.
Wow.
And so now we're to a shall issue state, where anyone with a NRA certified pistol instructor can give you the training you need to get your permit. And IFC has done that. And so my involvement with them is to just, you know, I'm trying to work gun shows and spread the word. And just like this, I'm telling the story. Hey, if you're in Iowa in November, look at the back of the ballot, vote for the Freedom Amendment. We've got to have that protection, because right now, you know, we've already seen once, IFC just won a court case against Monroe County, Iowa, where they violated state law and denied someone their right to carry, and then went after the org and an individual in the state, to the point where they were awarded a $100,000 judgment. IFC won against a county in Iowa for violating Second Amendment rights.
Boom. Yeah. So to our 7 Iowa listeners, in November, vote yes.
In November.
In yeah. November, vote yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. Now, you serve on a lot of different boards and committees, and you have. How do you think that translates into Area 3 Director and the Board of Directors for the USPSA?
Well, I bring a lot of... working on boards is tough, right? You've got 10 to 12, especially in our sport, type A personalities. That carries over to the Ike's board and to the IFC's board. To be able to connect and work with these people, you know, is a skill that I've practiced now for over a decade. You know, at the same time, I've been able to be approachable. You know, at our range, we have no staff. We self-police, which is code for if you're a volunteer here, you know, there are times I have to leave our USPSA match and go over to the bays that aren't being used for the match and say, hey, what are you doing? Rounds are leaving the range. Come on, let's talk about this. And how do you do that without putting someone off? And it's the same way. How do you make the balancing act between, do we spend money on new trap machines, or, you know, do we buy that Texas Star that we've really wanted? You know, you just got to figure out how to get in the middle. And ultimately, you know, I'm pursuing this role as a way to better serve the membership as a whole. And I know that sounds hokey, but that's really what a board member does. Is, you know, when we run our sectional, we shut down the whole facility for 4 days. Man, we have to think about that, you know, because we've got 750 people that are paying, you know, $200 a year to be able to come shoot when they want to. And here we're telling them no. So we got to make sure it's worth it.
And how do you sell that to your members?
I get them to come and shoot, and usually every year that we hold a sectional, myself or one of my other staff members will interact with a casual member, and about a tenth of the time they end up shooting USPSA or something, or Steel Challenge or Rimfire Challenge, or we don't really do any I-Course anymore. We did the Midwest Regional a couple times.
Now, we had touched on briefly earlier about the USPSA budget. Mm-hmm. It's come under fire. And
yep.
What are your thoughts initially? And you don't have a lot of information, I'm sure. You'd like to see more information. But just off the top of your head, what are you thinking are some options going forward?
My understanding is that one of the biggest expenses each year is nationals. And I understand that multiple nationals is very appealing. You know, you could put up some big numbers, and you can always get more people through 4 nationals than you can 1. But now you're paying travel budgets for 4 matches. You're paying lodging for 4 matches. Is that the best use of our resources? It might be. And if it is, then what are we changing to make sure that we can do that and not go in the hole? You know, I honestly like the idea of a week-long nationals, pick your division and shoot it, but I know that's not a popular idea, right? Especially from, you know, some of the pro shooters, where If you're a GM level shooter, you're going to be pretty good with whatever gun you pick up, right? Because it's not to a certain extent you can buy skill, but at that level you can't buy skill, right? There's no gun. You're going to be good with whatever gun you put in your hand. And so, you know, to say, hey, I can, you know, pick up a gun and shoot Carry Optics Nationals and probably do in top five. I could probably do the same thing in open. I can probably maybe do the same thing in limited. You know, now I'm, you know, getting three bites at the first crack of the prize table and more, resume builders. But is that the best thing for the org? You know, what does that top level shooter give back to the org? I don't know.
I'm not sure either, but they are fun to watch shoot.
They are fun to watch, and that's cool. And I tell you, one of the neatest guys to talk to is in 2012. I worked production nationals that Phil Strader ran down in Tulsa, and Eric Griffel happened to be staying in the same hotel as I did. And I got to have breakfast with him. I just kind of joined him. It was maybe might impose myself, but it was really cool to talk to him and see how personable he is, and then to watch him on the range. And that guy is something else. He is a great representative of our sport, and a great shooter. That was, you know, I've told the story many times to other people. I said, you know, this was the last time I told it was when Michael Phelps had just won his 8 gold medals. I said, you know, if you're a swimmer, the chance of you sharing the pool with Michael Phelps is about zero, right?
Right.
But I got to share the range with the best shooter in the world. And he took time to talk to me and tell me what he thought the differences and what it was like shooting an IPSC match compared to a USPSA match. And he probably spent 30 minutes with me, and I was nobody. I was just some RO.
Did he say which he preferred?
Well, I mean, we didn't talk about preference really, just talked about the difference. And he made the comments that, hey, you know, there's really no strong hand, weak hand here at this match. And there was no prone, and, you know, just not some of the pure shooting tests that he's used to seeing at a level 3 in IPSC. And some of that comes from the IPSC stage requirement, right? You have to have, and I always get this ratio wrong, like 3 short courses for every field
2
course.
Medium,
yeah, there's
long,
a ratio.
Right.
And so when you have to have, when you mandate those short courses, you get more of that. You get more of that strong hand, weak hand, and other stuff.
So that it's not the same thing from stage to stage, right?
And at this time was, you know, the height of Area 3 where, well, that was Nationals and it was at Tulsa. But, you know, that was the era of Area 3 where, you know, the short course is 28 rounds and everything else is 32.
Hmm. Okay. Everything's high round count.
Yeah.
Go fast and high round count. Right.
Yeah,
yeah, that guy is pretty amazing. And
I think he was saying he was shooting 200,000 rounds a year at the time.
Holy cow.
And he was sponsored by Armscor, was on his jersey along with, and he was shooting the Tanfos then. That's back when the Tanfos first hit production, 2012.
Yeah, and now he's shooting CZ.
Wow. So, yeah. You go where the sponsor is.
Yeah. I don't blame him there. I mean, again, he can pick up any gun.
Correct.
And beat 99% of the people. So
right, and we see that. I mean, we just saw Nils. Nils do that. I mean, he finished top 5 shooting minor.
Second.
Yeah, second crazy. Shooting minor. Yeah,
yeah, crazy.
Another super nice guy.
It's borderline illegal.
No, the biggest thing with USPSA and the budget is, are they forward thinking? And looking at a continued reduction in activity fees due to financial and economy that are well beyond their control.
Right.
Right. They have to anticipate and react. You know, you're not, you know, they're never going to be in a position to hand out ammo and say, come shoot the match. That's just
Correct.
Not going to happen.
Correct.
All we can do, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so what are your plans for Area 3 match?
I mean, we're going to put on a good match. If it's up to me, I think Grand Island is a fantastic facility. Okay. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere, but Hornady, I can't speak highly enough. They roll out the red carpet. You know, if I were making a decision today about next year, and I've offered my help, whether I win or not, I want to help with the match. My best friend that helps me run the club here went out there and did stats, and you know, we both are on board for next year, win or lose. We're going to be there to help make the match great. I prefer a match with. I like the short courses. I think they're important. You can't win a match on a short course, but boy, you can sure lose it. Some things I didn't see this year that I'd like to see. I'd like to see some prone. And keep in mind, I'm a 6'4", 300-pound guy that is mobility impaired, but I still think it's important. I want to see some strong hand and weak hand. You know, let's make sure we're testing all the shooting fundamentals, you know, and at the same time, it's about delivering a quality match experience. You know, if we talk about USPSA or even just a club, you know, what are the products? The products are the match experience, the scores, and the rule set. That's USPSA's product to the competitor and to the member. Right. You know, that was their product. If they're going to that sponsor, that's a different answer, right? It's a, hey, here's access to 30,000 people that spend a significant portion of their disposable income on firearms related products all the time. That's what they offer to a sponsor, but to the competitor, to the member, it's the match experience, it's the rules, and it's the scores. Pardon me.
That's okay. Are you happy with the rules as they are now?
I would be happier if they stayed a little. It seems like we've changed a lot recently. I would like to see things settle down a little bit. You know, there's a lot of talk about production's dead. We have too many divisions. You know, that's really a self-correcting problem. You know, the Iowa sectional coming up, you know, I'll look a month out and I'll say, okay, single, you know, whatever division, these three divisions have fewer than 10 competitors in them. So I'm going to shoot an email to those people and to the whole match and say, okay, this and this division does not have enough representation. We will not be recognizing them. There'll be no awards. You know, if you're welcome to shoot it, that's fine. But there'll be no awards for it. If you want to change divisions, let us know. We'll facilitate that. You know, do we get rid of it? I don't know. I don't see a real reason to get rid of them. But I think your match directors need to be communicative and say, hey, we're not going to, you know, if Revolver has two people in it, you feel free to come and shoot, right? Great. Pay your match fee, come and shoot. There's no prize. There's no prize support. There's no awards. You know, we're not going to give a first and second place for two people. And that eventually will correct itself. Either more people will come into it, or they'll pick a different division.
Yeah, they're all picking carry optics.
They're all picking carry optics. Well, and let's
like me.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest. It's. You know, I shot open for a long time, and I went to carry optics because one. I don't have to do the 2011 dance and make sure my ammo's perfect to make sure I've maintained my gun. My carry optics gun, you know, I've cleaned it twice this season.
What open is gun. Your carry optics gun?
Right now I'm shooting M&P Core, the Gen 1, okay. Not the Gen 2. I have a SIG Romeo 1 on the top of it.
Okay. This is a mix and match.
Yeah. Well, I run the Romeo 1 on my open guns, so I'm used to the shape of the shape of the glass,
the window, and, everything. Yeah,
and I had a pile of them.
Well, look, if you ever need to dispose of any, I'll send you my address.
But the guns run great. I ordered an Apex trigger up on them, and I put them in, and it's the same trigger every time. They're super reliable. You know, I can load, I could pick up range brass and I can load it, and you're shooting minor. I typically plan for one reload as opposed to coming out of production. I can focus on, am I shooting? I put my guns, I put rounds on target, and less about what's the gun dance. Is it going to run today?
There you go. Yeah. It's the poor man's, I say the poor man's open, but it's not poor, but you know, I mean, you got high capacity magazines, you've got a dot.
Yep.
So it's fun.
Yeah. I mean, and let's be honest, the Shadow 2s, they're super nice, man. And it's basically a limited gun with a dot on it now.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are big, heavy guns with a dot. Earlier we talked about, I asked specifically about the Isaac Walton thing, conservation versus gun group.
Yep.
Now, and then I brought up, you had members obviously that can't shoot during the time that you have the Iowa sectional there.
Yep.
So unpopular decisions made by the board of USPSA, how would you, I don't want to say sell that unpopular decision, but let's say you get in there and you're looking over the financials and you're like, look, we're between a rock and a hard place. This is what we have to do, whether we like it or not. How do you sell that tough decision to the members?
Well, I think it starts with transparency. If you're talking specifically finances, you just lay out the books and say, here it is, right? Here are the numbers. Here's where we're at. We can point fingers about how we got here, but at this point, we have to deal with where we're at. And we got to move forward. We got to have a plan to be forward and ultimately be a business next year and be a business the year after that and be a business 10 years from now. And the only way to do that is to make good as you can financial decisions. And you've got to ask for help when you don't know. I am not a CPA. I can read balance sheets. I can read P&Ls. But at the same time, I know when I'm out of my depth that I'm not afraid to ask for help and say, hey, help me understand this so that I can make a good decision, because I have been entrusted by the people. If I get voted in, I've been entrusted by the people that voted for me to represent their interest and make sure that they have some place to go next year, 5 years from now, 15 years from now.
I like it.
Let's talk about the next 800-pound gorilla. Well, let's talk about the bands, right? That's what everybody wants to, the day I announced my candidacy, one of my friends got on there and asked me a really hard question. And I have done a lot of soul searching and talking to figure out where am I going to be on this? They've banned some people, and that's a huge step. And it's pretty similar to where we have with the Ikes, right? We can say, hey, don't do that. We can have the attorney send you a letter saying, hey, don't do that. And we can kick you out of the club. And at the Ikes, in my time there, we've done that to 6 people. All right. 3 refused to come and talk to us. 2 left with more holes than they came to the range with. And 1's in prison forever. So
okay.
So wow. That's what it took there. I don't know everything, right? I spend some time in social media. I don't spend a ton, but I spend some. And so what I know is what I've read from social media and what I've heard from other people. And I can't say that I would have voted to ban these people with the knowledge that I have right now. There's absolutely more to the story. Would that answer change if there's more? Maybe. When you exclude someone from the sport, you go truly against the whole mission of the sport. And I understand that if they were doxing people or, making it uncomfortable for people where they thought they would lose their jobs, their real jobs, because of their actions within the USPSA. I understand that's a risk that I take every day with every volunteer activity that I'm on, right? If something comes out and there was some financial impropriety with the Ikes and it came out that I knew about it and didn't do something or was somehow involved, that absolutely would bleed right over to my professional career. And I'm maybe done, out. And so I'm cognizant of that all the time, but I still do it. So would I have voted to ban those people? No, probably not. Is there more information? Yeah, there absolutely is, right? There's his side, there's each side of the story, and the truth is somewhere in the middle. And so could that change based on what I don't know? Well, yeah, I think that anyone could say that.
Sure. I mean, if there are some facts you're unaware of, sure.
Right. But no, I wouldn't have. And in many cases, I know half of these guys in person. I've met them, talked to them. Some of them, so that's the question that I knew was going to come out, needs to come out.
I actually didn't have that question. So thank you for bringing it up. So there are some questions I'm like, I could ask, but at the same time, I don't want to come off like I'm just trying to start some controversy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I wasn't trying to go there, but I appreciate you doing that.
Well, it's a question that has to be answered, because there's, right now I know of two other candidates and they're all going to get asked that question. I understand the board, came out of executive session and chose to vote as a block. I guess I don't know enough about the discussion that they came to that decision, right? What drove that? I understand the desire to present a unified front. Yeah. I could tell you that, in the six instances that I talked about, on three of those, it wasn't a unified vote. The other three, it absolutely was. And that's okay. As a board, when I was president, I tried to always make sure that every board member felt like they had a vote and that everyone was on equal footing. And if you ever get on, I don't care what kind of leadership it is, whether it's four board members or 12 or 20, if you ever get to the point where someone on that committee or on that board doesn't feel like their voice carries the same weight as anyone else's, then that board is diminished. And it will never be as effective as if they are all together and at the same level, or at least feel that they're at the same level.
Right.
Everyone's going to be different. Everyone's going to be, some people are going to be more eloquent. Some people are going to be better spoken. And some people are going to be more knowledgeable. But they all have to have equal weight votes, and they all have the right to be there and to have their opinion matter.
Yeah, everybody has 1/9 of a vote.
Correct.
Yeah, and so I agree with that. And I think, too, that some people, I don't think they think about it enough beforehand, but once you're in that position, you're elevated up to where, not like you're better than anybody, however, you're more in the spotlight.
You're a pinata.
Things are going to be directed at you. Some of them aren't going to be true, but you're going to have to put on your big boy thick skin and kind of deal with it, which leads us into one other question. Two, actually, because we're in this whole thing. One is, knowing that you're 1 of 9, how would you promote your ideas within that group? And two, dealing with the social media stuff and things like that, how do you plan on managing that?
So when it comes to any group of people, the person that comes forth with the plan and to a certain extent the picture, and can present it coherently and can present their ideas completely will do well and will be successful. And I'm and then it's also a matter of for the term I've come kind of coined is social capital. And it's just a matter of give and take. You have to be willing to work with people and embrace their ideas and goals as long as they further the mission of the org and kind of go with them with the understanding that when it comes time for you to put forth an idea that you can then pull on that a little bit and maybe they won't they won't support you fully, but they won't get in your way either. And so it's the biggest thing is communication, to be able to clearly understand what your goal is and explain it and explain why it's better for the org and why it's better for and why you want to do it. And social media, man, love hate, right?
Yeah,
It's
absolutely.
cool. I like posting videos. I like seeing what my friends are doing. I like seeing what other people are doing. But at the same time, I guess a good friend of mine told me one time, he says, don't get down and roll in the mud with the pigs because they like it.
For
Right? And
sure.
all you do is get covered with mud. And I think he used other words, maybe a little more colorful, but
I can imagine.
the premise is the same, right? Social media is a tool. And if you use it as a tool, you use it for match promotion, you use it to get the word out there, to communicate to potential customers of Area 3 or USPSA. It can be very positive. At the same time, it can be too much, and it can turn into a hammer.
Absolutely. All right, so I just had three more questions. Now I forgot one. So we're down
I'm
to
sure you'll remember.
two. I hope so. One of the things I've been asking for, or I've been saying, I think would be a good idea, and I think it would help alleviate a lot of this. That's me, is streaming board meetings. I know there are certain things that can't be put out there live, but I really feel like, some people are afraid that, oh, I can't vote the way I'd want to if people, could see me voting. I think that's nonsense. It shouldn't
I
matter.
agree. I agree.
I think watching the board members debate and see where people are at and hearing the discussion, I think that goes a long way in squelching a lot of this. But what are your thoughts?
I think we can get there. So I've been around USPSA long enough to remember back when we had an executive director, and then they decided to change, and I wanted a president that had a more encompassing role, had more pay, and now we're back to an executive director. And I think if we can get the board to where that executive director handles all of the employee stuff and handles it behind the scenes, where the board gives them clear directions and say, hey, this is what we want the employees to do, and it can be handled out of the board meetings. Because the biggest thing that I've heard coming out of the board meetings, and I have to admit some ignorance in this, the IKES has no employees. We have zero employees. We have a contractor that does some things, but we have no employees, no payroll. And a lot of the things I've heard about, and the reason they don't do this is that they've got employees, and when you have expectations of privacies based on state law. If
Right.
we can move all of that to the executive director's shoulders, where either the board as a whole or individual committees of the board give them direction and say, here, this is what we want the employees to do, and we want you to handle it outside of our meetings. And the meetings are truly about big picture items about, hey, what are we doing for nationals? How are we supporting clubs? How are we driving the mission forward? How are we serving our members? That absolutely, there's no reason that couldn't be online. But when you get into that employment status and the privacy of the employer-employee relationship, that adds a whole new complexity to it.
It does. I
So I
agree.
think if with this executive director, and I know there's been a lot of resistance a lot of very vocal resistance to this change in the presidency. But maybe this is part of where they're going. And I don't know. I'm not speaking from any inside information. This is just me speculating from the outside and saying, hey, maybe we can get there. Maybe if we have the executive director that can truly lead the employee side of the organization and take that out of the board meeting, then we can get to board meetings that are open. And I think it would be very hard to react to questions during a board meeting. Because, man, you know, I've been in board meetings that have taken 30 minutes, and I have been in board meetings that have taken 4 hours.
Right.
And you don't know at the you maybe from the agenda you'll get an inkling, but I've been surprised and been like, holy smokes, where did this topic come from? And now we've been here in an hour, and I've got the whole rest of this agenda to lead the board through.
Well, but I think you can use the agenda as well to put all of the employee stuff first that doesn't go live.
Yep.
And as soon as you hit the end of that employee employer relation stuff, you can turn the cameras on, and then the rest is go. And you don't have to answer questions from the members,
right?
You know, but at least they can just sit, and if you can, but you know, maybe not every time, because that could very well extend those for hours. But I think just having the ability, the opportunity, and knowing that I could turn it on and watch at any time just to see what, I mean, it's no different than, I'm a firefighter paramedic for a local county. We're the second largest fire department in the state of Virginia.
Okay.
And every time there is a Board of County Supervisor meeting, it is streamed live on a special channel on the cable network.
Yep.
So everybody in the county can watch.
Yep.
You're not asking questions, but you're hearing every single debate of every single topic. You can see how your guy voted, or, you know, whether he's for something or against something. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I say this knowing that, you know, my friends that are on the Ikes board are going to call out and say, hey, you've never advocated for that at the Ikes. And they're right. I've never have. But at the same time, you know, we don't have any members that are more than a 20-minute drive away, and the board meetings are open and in person. You know, USPSA, you know, you've got what, 10 hours one way, you know, depending. You know, it's just not feasible for in-person meetings. Yes, they do them at nationals, but they're very, very sparsely attended. 40, 50 people maybe, and those are high attendance ones.
Right.
Yeah. No, I as a AD, I would be definitely open to that. But, you know, still cognizant of the fact that especially that employee-employer has to be held away. And then other things like contract negotiations with different ranges as we're planning for nationals or other events. You know, some of that you don't necessarily want open, even though it should be public record at some point.
Right. Maybe not during the negotiations, but after.
Right. You know, we have to, you know, you got to file the 990, you know, all that stuff is public. You know, it's amazing what you can learn from 990s as you troll through them and read them.
My last question is this. Las Vegas calls up Scott Arnberg, says, Scott, this is the most heavily contested carry optics nationals in the history of the world. Who was your early odds on favorite to win carry optics nationals 2022?
This might be the
most pointed question of the entire podcast.
I think it's going to be a race between Max or JJ. I watched Max shoot Area 3, and man, the dude's a machine. But JJ has that kind of that ability to if he gets, you know, he's good all the time, but occasionally he's really good. And if he can line one of those up, look out. Max is super consistent. So I think it's an even or. If I had to pick one, I guess I'm going to pick Max.
Okay. So far, most people have chosen Max. So we shall see here in about, 3 weeks?
Yep.
So yep. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, it will be. I'm kind of bummed that I'm not able to be out there. We just started, school started for my kids yesterday, and it's now 5 days a week football practice, 6 days a week football practice, and daughter has a job, and I'm looking forward to being the dad in the bleachers.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That'll be cool.
Yeah. Yep. He's a freshman in high school this year. And he's 6'3", 180, and works out every day. So it's going to be fun to watch him.
And what position are we talking?
They've moved him from running back to tight end because he had he gained about 4 inches this year. So he's going to be playing tight end and defensive linebacker. Yep.
Oh, linebacker. Okay.
Yep. And so
that's awesome.
Big school. I was at practice yesterday, and they had two offenses, two defenses, and kids on the sidelines for ninth grade only.
Holy cow, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
So freshman team has two offenses, two defenses, and leftovers.
And leftovers.
Dag nabbit. How many people, how many kids are in that school? What's the population of that school?
I have no idea. It's a new school for him this year. But it's going to be a cool year for him. He's super excited. We've done basketball camps and football camps and, gym and all kinds of stuff all summer. It's kind of cool to watch him progress. 2 years ago, I was a little worried about him. He played a lot of Fortnite and a lot of other games online, and now he's just the opposite. His computer will go days without being turned on.
But you know what that means? If you need help streaming your stuff, he can help you.
That's probably true. That's probably true. He does.
I'm sure after football, the basketball coach is going to be looking for him. The track coach is going to be looking for him.
I already signed him up for football, basketball, and baseball. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, baseball is
this will be the first year for baseball. He's never played before, never showed any interest.
Oh, so, interesting.
So it all depends on his grades. The grades got to be there. The school holds him to, I think, a B average.
Wow. Okay. That's good, though.
Yeah, that is good. That is good.
Well, Scott, that's all I have. Is there anything more that you wanted to touch on or?
No, Dave. I appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast and help me get the word out there. I look forward to the opportunity of being able to work with the members of Area 3. Like I said, I want to be involved with the match. I have the ability to be involved with the match again more. Win or lose, I want to be involved with the match. I'm never going to be a Max Michelle, but man, I can deliver a quality match experience.
Well, that's awesome. That's good that to you it's not personal. It's just, if you can, you will. If not, if they choose someone else, okay.
Yeah. Life's too short to be angry. It's just, if they pick me, great. If not, that's cool too. There'll be another election in 3 years.
Well, I was going to say, if they don't choose you, that's just more time to do other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I'll still be involved with the match. I had a great time there this year. I realized that I missed it. I took a couple years off. I had some changes in my role at the office and some family challenges. I'm getting my free time back, which is good and bad, you've experienced, your kids are in the 20s, they've got lives of their own, and all of a sudden you've got a lot more free time than you had.
Yeah, for sure. But
a few years, you'll be looking at grandkids maybe, right?
Let's not talk that yet. Well, again, Scott, this is awesome. I am not going to cut this at all, meaning I'm not going to separate it I'm going to put the whole episode out at one time, and it'll go out this Sunday.
All right. Awesome, Dave. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Well, maybe we'll do another one after I'm elected, huh?
Okay.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.